So in the last time we talked about some of the founders of new movement and community. Remember we talked about the Focolare movement, and we also talked about last time about the Madonna House. We also talked about the Houses of Charity, which was inspired by Martha Rubin, who suffered really in a way is extraordinary that she was suffering for like 50 years and paralyzed completely, not able to use her legs and hands, and not able to sleep for 50 years, and no food and no drink, only sustained by the Holy Eucharist. So quite extraordinary. So today, I will share a couple more of founders of religious movement and community. One is Dorothy Day. She was born in the year 1897 and died in the year 1980. She founded the Catholic Worker Movement. So she was a Protestant before, and she settled in New York and work for some newspaper. And those newspapers were quite socialist. And so eventually she described herself later on in life as an ex-communist. So because he was influenced by the socialist idea when she was working for those newspapers. But gradually she became more and more Catholic. So as a young journalist in New York, she would sometimes visit Catholic Church. And so she was really attracted by the atmosphere of prayer in the church. And she also really fascinated by the spiritual discipline of the Catholic Church. And she also found that the church is a church for immigrants and also for the poor. And in 1922, she worked in Chicago. As a reporter, and she was staying with three young women. And those three young women, they were Catholics, and they would go to church, and they would pray every day. And so Dorothy Day became convinced that the highest form of activity, the noblest activity a human being can do, is to pray, to adore, to worship, to pray, to give thanks. To pray is the highest form of human activity. And in the year 1924, she got a bit money, so she bought a property, and she was also living common law relationship with a man. And at that time, you know, that man that she lived with was almost anti-anything. Anti-marriage, anti-religion, anti. So, well, I don't know why she would want to live with somebody like that. Anyhow, okay. So,
love is blind.
So, but you know, but good that Dorothy Day wasn't too blind, because her interest into the Catholic faith eventually caused her and her common law partner have more and more quarrels, and then eventually she found herself unexpectedly pregnant with baby. And so her boyfriend, even anti-life, didn't want her to bring into the world a baby. She was thinking, you know, no point to bring somebody into the world, so bad a world. So, you know, Dorothy Day, before she had an abortion before, because she had an affair with a journalist before and she had an abortion. But this time she was determined to keep the baby. So even though her partner opposed, she kept the baby. And then when the baby was born, she really wanted to give the best to her daughter. And so she wanted to be able to give her faith. And so she found that the best faith to give her is the Catholic faith. So she went to the church and to find out how she could get her daughter baptized. So she has got more instruction. And in spite of the opposition of her partner, she got her daughter baptized. And then eventually, there was a breaking down of the relationship. So after breaking down, she didn't try to save that relationship because, you know, to be a Catholic, she must be free from that common law relationship. So they broke up, and then she became Catholic the same year, on December 28, 1926. So after that, you know, Dorothy Day also have that determination to be a single woman, to be celibate, so that she could be dedicate herself for the work of God, to serve God. So in the year 1932, on December 9, she met an older man. That older man was an inspiration for her. He was a former Christian brother. He was also single, and so he got a lot of time to, you know, to read a lot of books, and then she know a lot of social teaching of the Catholic Church, living by himself. And so he inspired, you know, his name is Peter Marin. He inspired Dorothy to start a newspaper. He told her, you know, to bring the best of Catholic thought to the man in the street, in the language of the man in the street. So use the common language to pass on the Catholic thought. And so she followed his advice, start the newspaper of Catholic Worker in the year 1933, in May. So a few months later, you know, she kept the price really low of that newspaper. A few months later, in December, it was like printing 100,000 copies already. So it became a popular newspaper. And the newspaper not only complained about the social structure of the time, but also challenged the readers to respond personally. Now the older man who inspired him, Peter, he also wrote articles on that newspaper. And on that newspaper, he challenged the reader. He said, you know, we shouldn't just look after the poor people that we know and then leave the strangers up to the charitable organization. So he challenged people to have in their home, have a room to, as a Christ room, to welcome the poor people. He challenged the parish community to have a house to welcome the poor people. So his article was circulated because of the newspaper, and because the price kept so low, some poor people read the newspaper. So they read about, oh, should welcome poor people. I'm poor, I can go to them. So they started going to the newspaper asking for help. And so the editors, they know they should now put into practice what they were teaching. So they got an apartment for poor ladies. Dorothy Day were there. And then they got another place, and then another place. And then by the year 1936, they got 33 Catholic worker houses across the United States. Now, one time a social worker asked Dorothy Day, how long can your client, quote, client, can stay in the house? And Dorothy Day answered, we let them stay forever. And she said, they live with us, they die with us, we give them a Christian burial, we pray for them after they are dead. Once they are taken in, they become members of the family. Or rather, they always were members of the family. They are our brothers and sisters in Christ. Now, Dorothy Day has a position. You know, sometimes his idea, at that time will be, I think even at our time today, some of them may be considered a bit radical. Like she really wants to see the world with no division of country at all. And then also another position she had was that totally against war and violence. Remember, it was the time when there was Second World War. It was the time before World War, there was the Spanish Civil War. And some Catholics, they really support the dictator because they find that he could be the one who protect the interests of the Catholic Church. And so there, of course, and also in theology, in some situation, there can be justifiable reason for having war. But like St. Francis of Assisi, She was the one who really opposed to any war at all. So she paid for her position. You know, she had that idea not to support any war. And some people in the graphic workers movement didn't agree with her. And so some people, they left her. So she lost some of the houses. She lost staff for her newspaper, you know, or readers of her newspaper. So to be firm in that position is not easy at that time. Because a lot of people, even within the church, would think that war can be justified. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think the World War, when it started, it was people, many people are for the war. You know, now I think later on, when it dragged on, then people would start to be tired of war, you know. But when it first started, people were excited, you know. They were actually think it's a good thing to have war. So her position was, you know, to care for the sick and for the wounded, to grow food for the hungry, to continue all kinds of works of mercy, but not to support the war. So that's her position. You know, even later on in life, when during the Cold War, they have the drill, you know, for nuclear, and then she would be opposed to the drill completely, and they would be the Catholic worker movement would be sitting in a public place in protest, but they refused to join into the drill, and she was actually arrested a couple of times because of that, because at that time it was against the law, I suppose. But she would not cooperate anything that would in any way support nuclear weapons, you know. So she was really completely against war. Now, she also, in 1965, she went to Rome in Italy. Theologian. So she went there to fast for the intention. Because that was, at that time, it was the Second Vatican Council, that the Council Fathers would make a really clear statement against war at the Vatican Council. And so she and those ladies who joined the fast, you know, would be happy to hear that in the constitution of the church in the modern world, it was said that, you know, it is a crime against God and humanity, any act of war directed to the indiscriminate destruction of whole cities or vast areas with their inhabitants. So, you know, so if you destroy a whole place without distinction of who is living there, just to destroy everybody there, that's a big sin. And then it's also called the state to make legal provision for conscience objectors. So people for conscience reason, they find they cannot participate in war, you know, the council call for, you know, give leeway to them, you know, legally. And then the council also describe as criminal those who obey commands which condemn innocent and defenseless. So if an unjust command, you just shouldn't obey. You know, you shouldn't just say, you know, the general told me to do that, so I should do it. You know, if it's unjust, you don't obey. It's just like law. You know, if unjust law in the state, we don't have to obey. And so Dorothy died on November 29, which yesterday was the anniversary, 1980. And so in the 100, when she was 100 years old, she's dead already, right, at that time, it's 1997, that the Cardinal of New York started the case for her canonization. So that is a case going on, but we don't know how it's going to work out. So a lot of founders I mentioned, the last three founders I mentioned in the last meeting, and the one we mentioned today, that they all are not beatified yet. So they are not blessed, they are not saints, and I think four of them, they all have cases of canonization going on right now. And so one day they might be canonized, but it's something that we have to wait and see. But the final one, which I'm going to share with you, the fifth founder, he is already canonized. He's a saint, and that's Saint Jose Maria Escrira, the founder of Opus Dei. So we have his relics here today. Here is a relics of St. Teresa, St. Catherine of Alexandria. And here is the relics of St. Jose Maria Aspira, the father of Opus Dei. This relic is pretty interesting. You know, all the other relics, usually what you get is people die, you exhume their tomb, they got bones from their tomb, that's how the relics came from. But this one, no. This one is dead already when he was alive. Because when he was getting older, he got dental problems. So they had to pull out teeth for him. And so people knew that he would be a saint, so they collect those teeth. And so when he died, that's the relics they used. So it's from his tomb. So they didn't have to open his body. No opening of the tomb. It just from what already available when he was alive. So, you have any dental problem?
I've already collected some.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that so this is the relics. This relic, this particular relic, they it's off the group in Latin. It's been from the bone. You still have the bone because tooth is your bone, right?
If you think I'm going to be ashamed, I'll pull a tooth out for you.
I think it's more practical that you pull out a hair for me. It's still a first class relic. Yeah. So and I think I'm really fortunate to have this relic because they are really strict in giving away relics. You know, it's not easy to get a relic of St. Jose Maria. Really difficult to get one. They are really strict of giving the relics. But I wrote a letter to them, and also there's a priest here, an Opus Dei priest who helped me to intercede, you know, and so finally I got one. So it was through some lots of frustration.
A whole tooth or part of it?
It's part of it. It's too small to be the whole one. Yeah. You know. And so quite often they only have those, you know, that like they have like in the whole Opus Dei center in for men, you know, there's only one for the whole community in the chapel. So I would say I feel really blessed to be able to have a relics of him. Anyhow, Saint Jose Maria Aspira, he was born in the year 1902 on January the 9th. And when he was 2 years old, he was extremely sick. He was really, really sick. And the doctor gave up on him already. But the parent prayed to Our Lady of, it's a difficult name to pronounce, Torituta, you know. And that's the place we are going next year, God willing. Right after we go to Our Lady of Lourdes, that's the place we hope to go to. After Lewis, you know, we have 3 shrines in Spain after France. So if we go there, hopefully. Oh. Now, the parent prayed to Our Lady and he unexpectedly recovered. And so the parents brought the baby to the shrine to give thanks to Our Lady. And it was that shrine, it was already there already at that time, an old shrine. But in the 1970s, St. Jose Maria, he directed a project to build a new shrine there. And so where we are going will be a new shrine staffed by the Opus Dei. And also, I remember a priest told me that people go to Spain to travel, go to different places, even go to Lourdes. And then when they go through the whole thing, when they come back, they found that place is more impressive. They found that it's a peaceful, prayerful place. So hopefully when we go there next year, you will find the same thing. So in the year 1912, April 23rd, he received his first communion. And the priest who prepared him taught him a prayer of spiritual communion. You know, spiritual communion is that we cannot receive, you cannot receive communion actually. You can make the spiritual communion to invite Jesus come to your heart. And that prayer goes something like this. I wish, Lord, to receive you with the purity, humility, and devotion with which your most holy mother received you, with the spirit and fervor of the saints. So this prayer now become more popular because of Opus Dei. Because that prayer became the popular and the favorite prayer of St. Jose Maria, and Opus Dei also make that a popular prayer. Personally, I just tell you one of my personal practice. Whenever I go to the church, when there's a Blessed Sacrament, of course we genuflect, right? And I would say a little prayer. One prayer I would say is the prayer we say at the beginning, O Most Holy Trinity, I adore you, my God, I love you in the Most Blessed Sacrament. That's the prayer the children of Fatima, they pray simultaneously on May 13 at the end of the operation. So I would say that prayer, and then I would add the spiritual communion in this prayer. So it's a good practice, I think. And so if you want a copy of this prayer, you can always read my article at the BC Catholic. So this week's article is on St. Jose Maria. Now, there are a lot of things happen in the family, suffering. You know, St. Jose Maria was the second of six children in the family. So he got some sisters. Three of his sisters died one after another within a few years. 1910, 1912, 1913. So that's, you know, sad for the family. You know, sometimes when they're baby, you know, so it's about three sisters die one after another. And then in 1914, you know, his father's business failed, so another suffering. So they had to move to another place because his father had to find jobs elsewhere. So all this taught him the value of human sufferings, but also make Jose Maria much more mature. And then in the year 1917, at Christmas vacation, one day he saw on the snow the footprints, the bare footprints, and that belonged to a Carmelite friar. So a Carmelite, not wearing any shoes, walking on the snow. And so Jose Maria asked himself, if other people make such sacrifices for God and neighbor, can't I offer him something? So he felt that God really wants something for him, you know, really wants something from him. He felt that God wants something from him. He wasn't sure what that actually is. So he decided he would become a priest so that he would be ready for anything that God would ask him. So 1918, he became a seminarian. 1925, March 28, he was ordained a priest. As a young priest, he was working hard, visit the people, the poor people, helping them, teaching catechism, lots of activities. And he was working in Madrid, in Spain. And then in the year 1928, on October 2nd, the Feast of Guardian Angel, during a retreat in Madrid, he was inspired by God to start a new form of community in the church, Opus Dei, that helped people to become holy, the people from all walks of life, people from all vocations to become holy. So at first, he would start to organize people in community, and they are mainly single men who are not going to marry. They will be dedicate themselves to God. So Opus Dei, you know, like in Vancouver, there is a men's center in Vancouver. It's near Oak and King Edward. So that is a regular, it's from outside, it's just like a regular house in that area. But inside, it's still a house. One part of the house is my favorite part is there's a chapel. There's a beautiful chapel there with Blessed Sacrament. And in that house, there are three priests. And also consecrated lay people. So they are dedicated to God, but they also do regular profession. They go to work during the day. But they will be, in the evening, they are as a community. They live as a community. And so there's the Opus Dei Center of Men in Vancouver. So when he first started, it was a community of men. But a couple of years later, in 1930, on February the 14th, you know, he felt the inspiration that Opus Dei should also include women. So that same year, 1930, he started a branch of Opus Dei for women. Again, they are dedicated women. And Jose Maria told the consecrated women that they have the same responsibility as men to serve society and the church. Actually, Dorothy Day, get back to her, I just remember one thing, that, you know, back in those days, you know, people would think women and men are different, huh? And, you know, I think even in a way, it's even different in dignity, you know, that's what I mean. So Dorothy Day was actually arrested, even before becoming Catholic, for protesting that women were not allowed to vote. So she was an activist, you know, she would fight for justice. So she was get into trouble a few different times of different issues. So that's one of the issues before she became Catholic, was that she was fighting for women to be able to vote. But anyhow, so it was 1930, Jose Maria Esquira telling the women that you have the same responsibility as men to serve the church and society. So there's a men branch of Opus Dei, a woman branch of Opus Dei. Did I tell you that there's a women's center too in Vancouver Diocese? It's in North Vancouver. There's a house for women of Opus Dei. So there's a men's center in Vancouver. There's also a women's center in North Vancouver. Now, while celebrating Mass in the year 1943, again, it's on February the 14th, he felt another inspiration. And that the inspiration to start another branch of Opus Dei is called the Holy Cross Society. Holy Cross, a teacher like it. Holy Cross Society. But it's a society for priests. Is that, so the Opus Dei can have priest member. So two kinds of priests. One is Opus Dei layman, who become priests. Another kind would be they are diocesan priests like me, but become Holy Cross Society member and they still remain diocesan priests, but they live the kind of life that is Opus Dei spirituality. So the really tall a pastor in Copper Christi in Vancouver, Father Hamilton, I think he is a Holy Cross priest. And then, as I mentioned, the priests that belong to Opus Dei, there are three priests in this archdiocese. So, in the year 1944, three of the members of Opus Dei became priests. So, in the year 1946, Father Jose Maria moved to Rome, to Rome, your city. And he told that he would be close to the Holy See to be able to obtain approval of Opus Dei in the church. And also he became the driving force from Rome to help Opus Dei spread like fire over the world, in Japan, in different places, all over the world. Now, and then in 1948, he extended membership, because right now membership is single man, single woman, priest, and then now he extended membership to married men and women, full membership. And then also, another kind of people that somehow link to Opus Dei are the cooperators. So there are different they have priest cooperators. They have lay people can be cooperators, but they also open up for non-Catholic, they can also be cooperators. So cooperators are somebody who support Opus Dei, quite often it's financially. But also it can be spiritually. If you're a priest cooperator, you can help them spiritually as well. So Opus Dei, in that way, the membership is like involve all the people of the world, all the faithful of the world, you know, because the diocesan priest who is working in the world, you know, and then lay men, single men, lay women, single women, but also married men and women. So basically, you do apostolic work, you know, you can like spread to all over different angle in society. And finally, also in the year 1950, June 16, Jose Maria finally got the final approval from the Pope of Opus Dei. So Pius XII gave the final approval of Opus Dei. And then in 1951, he consecrated the families of the members of Opus Dei to the Holy Family. And that same year in August, he consecrated Opus Dei to the Heart of Mary. In the 1950s, Jose Maria responded to the needs of society by initiating different kind of projects, like universities, like college, like farm school, training school, hospital, clinics, all kinds of projects. So, you know, Opus Dei, because they have cooperators, right? Because they have members who are working, right? So they also have the able to raise funds and do a really good project for people. And right now they are doing a pretty major project in this archdiocese. You know, there's the highway, sea to sky highway. You know, at one point before going to Squamish, there is a museum of the mind. Near that museum, there is a piece of land that belonged to Opus Dei, or I think maybe not directly under the name of Opus Dei. Maybe it's under like they have a foundation, but it's funded by Opus Dei member. Maybe it's under their foundation. I don't know how they work, but you know, it's Opus Dei people that Opus Dei that own the land. You know, whatever title they use to possess that land. But the plan is to use that piece of land to build a retreat center. So we can go there for retreat in the future. And it's a pretty huge project. It will be like it's almost like a beautiful shrine that I mentioned that Jose Maria directed in Spain, you know. So it will be a beautiful retreat center. But to build that is pretty costly, you know, because like to build a road into that property, that road will cost like a couple $1 million. Because it's not just a regular road. Underneath, you got all the utility, you know, electricity, you know, water pipe. You have to go underneath so that it can be, it can have a building. So they are raising fund right now. So it's still they plan, but they are now raising fund to have the project, to do the project. So that's why. So there are different projects. Huh? This is one of those. I think closer to us, to home, is what they are working on right now. It will take years to realize that project because it's a huge project. And then in the year 1962 to 65, it was the Vatican Council II, and the Council Fathers, you know, seek his advice on two themes. One theme is the universal call to holiness. Another theme is the lay people's mission in the church. The mission of lay people in the church. So he helped the Council Fathers during the Vatican Council. And then in the year 1969, Jose Maria did what we will do next year. He go on pilgrimage to different Marian shrines to pray for the world, for peace of the world, and also pray for the church. So, different shrine. So we will go to how many shrines next year? Can you count a Marian shrine? Five. Fatima, Lourdes, and then three other in Spain. So we'll go to five shrines next year. So, and then, couple of the shrines we will go, he went there too. Pretty good. Did you go to Loreto? Loreto, the little house. We won't go there, it's in Italy. But that's another shrine that he went to. Yeah. But already of the Pula we will go to, you know, Lourdes we will go to, you know, those are the shrines that he went to too. Anyhow, and then after the pilgrimage, in 1969, then from the year 1970 to 75, he also going to different places in Europe, in Latin America, catechetical trips. He went there to teach, address the members of Opus Dei and sometimes even large group of people and teach them about Catholic doctrines and also about Christian living. Saint Jose Maria has a wish to die like, when he died, he wanted to be like Saint Juan Diego. Saint Juan Diego saw Our Lady of Guadalupe. So his wish somehow fulfilled. He died in his office on June 26, 1975. So he went to his office, looked at the picture of Guadalupe, and got a heart attack. So he died of a heart attack. So when he died, when he got a heart attack, they called his doctor, and so his doctor came, but he died. So his doctor is actually at that time it was a priest, an Opus Dei priest, and that priest is now in Vancouver. That's Father Joseph Soria, and he's my personal confessor. So every Monday I go to him for confession. I go to Opus Dei Center for confession. That's where I go to confession. So Father Joseph Soria, a couple of Mondays ago when I go there for confession, November 18, it was actually his 57th ordination anniversary. He was ordained in the year 1956 on November 18. So he was more elderly than our elderly theologian. He was over 80. He's over 80 now, Father Joseph Soria. But he looked young. He looked younger than you actually. So
please don't age.
So please don't age. Are you sure? Yeah. So he's Spanish. He's from Spain. So when I planned my pilgrimage, actually I told him our itinerary. And so he got an idea where we are going. And then of course he recommend that shrine of Opus Dei, and I said it's already included. And then he told me that, you know, one time there was somebody who went there, I went to his pilgrimage, he asked his suggestion where to go, so he suggests where to go. A lot of places suggest also where we are going, like the cathedral in Lyon and stuff like that. And then when the man wasn't particularly religious, when he the good who went to Spain, but when he came back, he was the one who told Father Soria that he found more impressive is that shrine of Opus Dei, you know, because it's so peaceful and prayerful. So hopefully next year he will find that peaceful and prayerful. Looking forward, huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, let me just stop the recording.